Good morning. Today is Thursday, January the 14th, 14th day of the new year. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County DA, Maggie Fleming. And flower fan, huh?
Yes.
This one's kind of droopy a little bit, though. I mean, it definitely needs a little perkiness. We have a flower pen in front of us that we're looking at. Jeez. Our quote this morning. Oh, you're going to love this one. John Wilson. Does that trigger it? No, okay, I know it's a pretty common name. But it's a short quote, so we'll go with this one. 1822. Laws were made to be broken.
Well, there you go.
Kind of sounds like you're a Supreme Court justice, huh?
Yeah.
How impactful are some of their reinterpretations of law to the day-to-day activities in the office?
Very impactful. We spend a lot of our time trying to stay up to date on changes in the law because it influences, you know, how the court's going to instruct the jury. It influences decisions we make about whether or not someone can be charged with a crime. So, and then obviously it impacts how law enforcement are acting out on the street when there's changes. For example, law changes with regards to cell phones, things like that really have a big impact on how we proceed every day.
Can't put them over your shoulder anymore?
No.
With the strap? What about at the state level? Does the state Supreme Court have as much or cause as much changes in the operation as the federal, or is it the other way around?
I think both equally impact us because we are, you know, all of our cases go through once a conviction occurs or once a jury returns a verdict. The process then is to go through the Court of Appeals and then to the state Supreme Court if the state decides to take up that specific issue, an issue that maybe was raised, you know, specifically in the facts of the case that went through our courts. So they have a tremendous impact in us, over us, and then obviously the feds do too.
California versus another state's Supreme Court. Significant difference in interpretation? Pretty consistent interpretation.
Pretty consistent. The one difference is that other states' cases and rulings can be taken up by the Supremes. And then once the Supreme rules on it, then it's the law of the land, basically. So we watch other states as they interpret issues that maybe are also going to come up in our cases.
But who gets that duty? I mean, you got 51 different jurisdictions to monitor?
Well, no, because luckily it's now computerized. So, for example, the California District Attorneys Association sends out blurbs updating you on this is a hot topic now in, you know, North Carolina. We expect to maybe see it. Those sorts of things. But obviously it's a...
Yeah, I wonder how marijuana land use is going in North Carolina
it's
these
not.
Days.
Some states, just like some counties in California, will just... say it's not an issue at all for us.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:19. We'll be back with more from Maggie Fleming.
You've never heard us before because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, some of the different challenges that are out there also come from case law. We talked about, you know, just the judges' rulings. What about body of case law? That seems more incremental and more of like ooze coming under the door rather than a quick determination, and now everybody has to change the way that they do things. How impactful is case law on the way that you do biz?
So case law has a tremendous impact in the sense that it is the body of law that interprets our codes and our statutes. So we have to be aware of changes in case law because it influences, again, not just how we make a decision about whether or not a case can be charged, but then as we move forward with the case and then how the court instructs the jury if a case goes to trial. So sort of, you know, those are the key areas that we see when we talk about cases being reversed. One is how the court instructs the jury. And then the other can come up. It's called ineffective assistance of counsel, and that's when the defense attorney.
Was that ineffective?
Ineffective. Ineffective assistance counsel. And that's how the defense attorney may or may not have said to the judge, you know, we want these lessers, or we want this specific jury instruction, or here I've written a specific jury instruction for you based upon what I believe is the current trend in the law. And so it's interesting because sometimes
you can submit that to the judge?
Both parties can, but the ineffective assistance of counsel, which is how cases sometimes get reversed, is when a defense attorney has failed to ask for specific instructions because of changing areas of the law.
So it's not personal. It's just part of the process.
It's part of the process.
Here's a letter, Ms. DA. By the way, I think you're ineffective here.
Well, it doesn't happen for us. It happens for the defense. The idea is we put on the case and we're presenting it. And, you know, we are also tasked with making sure we're current on the law. But sometimes there's specific changes in the law that either the trend is or it's about to happen. And so it's difficult because basically the courts say to the defense attorneys, you should have been aware of this and you should have been asking the judge to instruct on this issue. And what's really amazing to me is that sometimes we're actually supposed to be looking to the future and trying to explore what we think might happen, because you can be a case can come back reverse because the Court of Appeals rules now this will be the letter of the law, and we've decided that it pertained to this specific case, even though there was nothing at the time that said that's the change in law.
Almost to be clairvoyant.
Right.
Now, what happens if there's a determination during the trial?
Then we have to go with...
You change boats in midstream?
Exactly. You have to change boats midstream.
Do you get like a day to do that?
Yes, you do. Okay. Although I thought that was the most interesting part about, Prop 47. That was so rare to say when the voters pass it, it will take effect the next day. That was just kind of one of those. Normally, it'll say effective January 1 or, you know, June 1st. That was pretty amazing to have a law, you know, voters pass something and then the next day in court be changing everything.
Now, what about a trial that is adjudicated with an interpretation from a judge or the Supreme State or federal come down with a determination? Is there normally a latency period for it to go into effect, or doesn't it go into effect at that
point? It's immediate. It's immediate. So, yes, you do. Even when you're in trial, you have to be aware of, you know, we get daily synopsis. We get the daily journal. We're following, you know, changes in law. And then, like I say, the state organization of district attorneys, we have a system, you know, where you're getting updated, you know, information through emails.
And having to monitor it on a pretty regular basis, I would imagine.
That's
if something's
correct.
Coming close to determination.
That's correct.
The Supervisors Planning Commission, everybody started this, started to put some specificity into the land use around marijuana and the grows in Humboldt County. I guess you'd have to say legal grows, which is still kind of a weird concept, or what will be a legal grow. How do you see that's going to change the landscape for you guys?
So how it changes for us is the idea being that permitted grows will then be, and this is all, you know, it's important we're moving forward like this, but it's with the understanding that if the state, you know, if the voters or the state determines that marijuana, you know, and whatever category they carve out as far as this is what's going to be legal, we're preparing for that.
We've established that you are clairvoyant.
Yes.
So let's go.
So then... the Board of Supes are trying to determine, as is provided for in the medical marijuana, you know, the changes that we just saw with the state legislature, what will be legal then, what will be our parameters in Humboldt County. And every county and obviously, you know, city, other jurisdictions have the ability to do that. So we're looking at those changes as they come forward. What I think is really important is depending on who's going to be deemed the sort of the inspectors, the regulators, those who go out to make the determination about permits, to have adequate funding and resources for them to actually do their jobs. Because that's important. And I think it's really important in a rural area because, you know, it's not like you could have two people who are going to go to some commercial zoned area of the county and say, it took us a day, we've viewed everything, we've said this area is good to go. When you're talking about people who are going out into fairly remote areas, it can take a day, you know, if they're going to go somewhere and do an adequate evaluation and inspection.
I would imagine if they were going out in the rural area and they were going that far out, they'd probably find more than just one stop.
That's right.
That's my sense. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30. We'll be back with more from Maggie Flum.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, with some of the different actions that the county is taking, and cities also in our part of the state, is that common throughout the entire state of California? Is everybody getting prepared?
Yes.
Are they using us as a template, or are we going to have 58 different versions of
right, no.
How to skin a grape?
Right. They're not. I think every county has its own specific issue. So what I do see, you know, for example, the Press Democrat covering Mendocino and Sonoma County, they have very many similar issues. Sebastopol, places like that, have seen exactly similar problems to Humboldt County for decades. So it's interesting to watch other areas and how they are addressing this versus some of the other counties who either because of, you know, whether they're urban versus rural or, you know, different issues they've got, they don't have similar issues to Humboldt County.
Yeah, I wouldn't think San Francisco has too many 10-acre grows and that are being,
Most of their issues and how they're looking at the problem are, how do we deal with dispensaries? How do we, you know, where will we allow dispensaries? You know, as we move forward, people are trying to address it so that it's a smooth transition towards how to handle that at both the city and the county level.
If we, what was it, 2-3 years ago, we were hearing about effluence off dairy farms.
Right.
That was a big rip and raging deal.
Yeah.
If we're having battles on things like that are basic, legal, simple to understand and grasp, how are we going to be able to do something that's much more complicated, much more rural, much more, I mean, to have a dairy farm or a dairy herd, that's a significant investment. You're not dealing with a mom and pop weekender kind of thing, doing it legal or doing it illegal. My concern is the sheer magnitude of this thing is going to be overwhelming. I mean, even out of complaints, do you have enough space to handle, let's say, 10 cases a month for that are going to court because of being out of compliance? I mean, I just see this thing getting so large, and particularly if there's no funding out of the state on this.
So I think we can learn a lot from some of the other areas and the problems that we've seen. I mean, that's a good example that you gave, because some of the problems that we've seen with hillside grows has been, you know, what comes down off the hill. How does that impact our streams?
We don't have that question with dairy farms. We know what's coming downhill.
Right. So I think that goes back to that same issue of who's involved with the regulatory piece and how are they funded, and making sure that the appropriate people are involved in the permitting and then the inspecting, whether it be, you know, Fish and Wildlife, Water Quality Board, the Ag Department from the county, you know, some of the different players that we need definitely to be involved in the process to make sure how we move forward is appropriate.
Do the feds and the, well, okay, so I guess the feds would be out of the equation. Do the state and the counties play well together in the sandbox?
I think some do and some don't. I mean, I think a lot of them are tied in to the state agencies. So, I mean, when you know, some of them, Fish and Wildlife, for example. So you have some agencies that do a much better job of looking at both county issues and state issues.
KINS News and Information Time's 840. We'll be back with more from Maggie Fleming.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka. Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 844. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. So, Maggie, so far we've been talking about the future. Let's use the rearview mirror and have absolute certainty on last year. Certainly, it was an active year. A lot of stuff was going on. Will you think of it as a positive year?
Yes, definitely. We've had a lot of changes in the office, which has been great. Thankfully, with Measure Z, we've been able to hire a number of people. I hired 9 attorneys last year, so we're now at full staff.
Will you throw everybody out the window?
No. We had some vacancies, and then we also, Measure Z allowed us to open some of the previously closed positions as well as fund additional positions. So we're now at 16 attorneys, which is great. And that's allowed me to create sort of the model of the vertical teams that I had hoped to put in place. So I now have, as of the first of the year, 4 attorneys assigned just domestic violence cases, because that's a huge caseload in our office, and I hope to put a dent into that caseload if I have people who are tasked with it from the start to the end. And then
people will not commit, not act that way because you've got more folks prosecuting it?
Yes. Here's part of the problem with DV specifically, and that is that the case gets filed, and then either from pressure from the person in jail or familial pressure, a lot of victims then pull back. And so what we see is that within weeks, we have cases that we can't prosecute anymore. And I'm hoping that if we start right at the beginning with services, with a victim witness advocate, with an investigator and with a DA assign the case, we can do something quickly on those cases. Most of them are going to be treatment, you know, and so that's sort of just taking the time to work with people and make them understand our goal is to stop the pattern. And so hopefully if, you know, as I say, we work more closely with the victims and with the advocates and with services right away.
So kind of compress the timeline.
Yes.
So that if it's 2 weeks, you can get a lot more done in 2 weeks and maybe.
Yes.
How much of the caseload is the frequent flyer program?
A very large portion, and that's true for domestic violence as well. We quickly see within months people having 2 or 3 cases. It's a problem that, you know, I think we're always going to feel the effects of Prop 47.
The second or third or fourth or offense, are the sympathies there as much as they are the first time? Not from the system, but from the familial network?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
So if somebody punches somebody out for the 8th time this year, they still have the same desire to have them not be dealt with legally as they did the first time?
Sometimes, yes. It's a difficult problem to understand. A lot of times there are sort of factors that it is very difficult to understand. Part of it is this idea of the person's not at fault because, and then there's excuses made. It was interesting. One time I had a defendant, he was in court, and he said to the judge, Your Honor, I'm really sorry. This only happens when I'm drinking. And the judge said, then you know what you need to do? You need to stop drinking. And I thought, yeah, it's sort of that. Sometimes you need someone on the outside to say, you have to stop blaming this problem on all these other factors. Work on those factors, solve those factors, because we don't want you to keep coming back in this situation. And it's a really, really difficult problem, similar to elder abuse.
Any of those habitual behavioral based.
And because it's a family, it's frequently a family situation, people really do want to try to not, I guess the only way I can explain it is, to not harm that person. So they're saying, I don't want him to have to be in jail. Well, that's part of sometimes what we need to do to get this person to see what they have to do to change why they keep coming back to the system.
The hit bottom part
of
the program.
Yeah, and it's hard. I see this, frequently, like I say, with elder abuse. The grandmother gets called from the jail and she starts to worry about houses. What's this doing to my grandson? I'm just going to say nothing happened and then he can come home and we'll take care of this. And unfortunately, that's not the solution, And so reaching out to that person and saying, your grandson has a very serious drug problem. We'd like to work on treating that drug problem and maybe then he'll be safe to come back home.
There's an ask rather than a statement. We are going to work. And it just depends. Is he going to be in-house? Or is he going to be seeing somebody each night? Or are we going to see immediate change? I mean, I would think that you would try to reduce the caseload and reduce the amount of pain associated with that activity.
We absolutely do want to, that's always our goal is if possible, let's change the pattern, number one for public safety, but also so this person isn't back in the system. But the issue is when you have family members, sometimes their thought process is we're just going to say nothing happened and then we won't have to go to court. Let's try to stop this so that we don't have to follow through with it. And that's a very difficult part of our problem.
Thanks for coming by.
Well, thank you.
We never know where we end up. Join us tomorrow morning for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you then.